Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a happy Thursday to you. Well, if you listen often enough, you know we've got a few featured guests that we bring back every single month, and this one today is one of your favorites. I know that. It is another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. The phone lines are open. We welcome your questions, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. What would happen if your faith and your health started to work in rhythm with each other? That's really what God wants. That's what the Bible talks about. So we're going to really integrate our faith, our personal responsibility, how our choices actually really do matter. And when we step into situations where our body's not functioning, there's a reason. And if you ask enough questions and you do a little digging and you pray, God will reveal the answer. And so often there's sometimes it just requires a few small tweaks, sometimes big ones. But you know what? When we are as committed to our health as we are committed to our spiritual health, we start to see ourselves strong. And I just do believe, as someone who's dealt with chronic health issues my whole adult life, I'm more convinced than ever that God wants us well, and he wants us to be able to serve him with a robust energy and strength. And, you know, I was reading in Andrew Murray's book about divine healing, and he was saying, when you deal with chronic health issues, you almost have to work at not becoming very selfish, because you're so self-focused on all your self issues. And if there's anything I don't want, it makes me nauseated to think about, is becoming so self-focused because I have all these issues. And I really believe God wants us to go from strength to strength. But there are some things that are on us that we need to do. So we'll get Dr. Troy on here in just a moment. A couple of quick announcements. If you listen often enough, you know that every year on Live the Promise, we do something called the Great Giveaway. And I'm always holding my breath every year going, what if this is a year you don't do it? Because it's so scary to devote a whole show to your calls, and then what if you don't show up? That's not meant to be manipulation, but maybe a little. Don't leave me hanging here. So because we're getting about 3 week late start, what is the great giveaway, you ask? It's our hope and prayer to mobilize thousands of you to get outside your comfort zone and engage in random acts of kindness. Just picture it. All over the world are people for whom Christmas is a hard time because they need a hand up. They need help. And if you could just ask God, what would you have me do? And then you do it. It's like we're sending you, we're commissioning you on a mini mission trip. And then December 22nd, we want you to come back and call. It's like you're calling from the field and saying, this is what we did. Want to hear from you. Well, because of my medical leave, we're getting like a 3 week late start. We're doing something a little bit different. Once you've done your random act of kindness, get on the Live the Promise show page and you'll see the great giveaway banner at the top. Fill out that form and tell us what you've done so we can start collecting stories now. The first 100 of you to do that will get a free copy of my book, Your Powerful Prayers, along with a sweet treat. Now, the two most inspiring stories, you're going to get a great giveaway basket filled with wonderful books from our Faith Radio shelf, some great fun Christmas movies, and all kinds of goodies. So it's just our way of saying thank you for being the hands and feet of Jesus during a holiday season that so many need help, need to be noticed. And just to give you a couple quick examples from last year, Jennifer from Madison, she set aside money from each paycheck and turned them into cashier checks, which she handed out to others, including a couple who was arguing out in public one afternoon. Pam paid for the groceries of a woman whose card was declined at the store. Cara from Minneapolis invited all her neighbors over for pizza and bought $15 worth of pizza to share with them. And she's like, that's all she had. That's what she did. And they loved it. Abby from North Carolina transformed Hope, ending domestic human trafficking. So she sewed into a ministry that's working at that. Let's see. Jocelyn of 7 years old made sculptures, used the money from selling those sculptures to buy toys for the needy. So there's really no limit to what you can do. So I pray with all my heart you will engage and then call in with your story on December 22nd. Okay, let me not waste another moment. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is CEO and founder of Synapse, a center for health and healing. He travels extensively conducting seminars on disease prevention and healing through a faith-filled, healthy lifestyle. His mission is to impact the well-being of people around the world by providing solutions to complicated life issues and to create sanctuaries that promote the restoration and perpetuation of health, happiness, and prosperity. And I would just say personally, he's made a world of a difference in my life and my health faith journey. Dr. Spurl's company is located in Eagan, Minnesota. We'll link up his practice on today's show page. Dr. Troy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure.
So good to have you. Now, you know this, and you're an overachiever, so I know you came armed with a passage of scripture because we open our show every day. What do you have for us?
Well, it's funny because it kind of goes along with what you were just saying about when on our health and faith journey, protecting against being selfish, and the first words are just, they speak on that. So it's 1 Peter 5:6, humble yourselves. Therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you.
Mm, beautiful. Do you have anything more you want to say about that? I mean, there's so much there.
But, oh, yeah. You could spend the full time just on that. But humbling yourselves looks very, very different. And sometimes it's really just making it not about you. And as soon as you take yourself out of the way, that's when the healing occurs. And so we're given all this truth, and it really does start with a choice of humbling yourself, whether it be not making your illness about you or you about your illness, or whether it be the random act of kindness. Sometimes when you're doing something like that, you're nervous because there's a fear of rejection or a fear of looking dumb in front of people or something along that lines, and you're making it about yourself instead of just going and doing it and surrendering that fear to God. So that humbling yourselves is very, very much a part of just healing in general. And then it also talks about just trusting God on the path in due time. It's his time, his plan. And the whole thing is a process. And we really don't know how long it's going to take. So I kind of liken it to being on a roller coaster ride. If you know you're on a roller coaster ride, you can have more fun with it. It'd be more pleasurable.
Exactly.
If you didn't know you're on the roller coaster, that can be pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
So just accept that you're on that ride. And that's part of learning in the process. And in today's world in particular, we want these quick solutions, quick fixes. And a lot of times we can identify answers to the difficult problems, but it's a process to get through it. And there's a learning curve, and it's a very, very live thing. And then something that is very, very important is surrendering those fears, anxieties to God. And there's more to it. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit later on that, but there's the mental act of letting it go, giving it to God. And then there's actual physical scenarios that help with that. And there's things that people don't realize are happening on a daily basis that they have complete control over that influence that, make it a lot easier to actually give your concerns to God, both with your mind and heart.
Mm, boy, that's so good. Last time you were on, we talked a bit about personal responsibility. And as I was thinking about just the open of the show, I was camping in Romans 8 today and talking about how it says, you know, flesh gives birth to flesh, which leads to death and destruction. Spirit gives birth to more spirit, which leads to life and peace. And really, whatever you're sowing into is what you're going to bear. The Bible says in other places, basically what you sow is what you grow. Another thing we talked about last time you were on is because we're in such a quick fix society, we want instant answers to get out of the moment. I don't want to feel this pain. Give me something to not have to feel this pain in the moment. But the choices we make on a daily basis contribute to a multifaceted, multi-layered health issue, right? So if we could look at this from, a life versus flesh, or, you know, a spirit versus flesh kind of, whether you're dealing with a chronic issue or you're dealing with a hard boss, there's a fork in the road. I mean, many times a day, what is life? The path of the spirit is life and peace. So even in your illness, if you start to get self-focused, it's death, destruction. It doesn't bear good fruit is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a challenging thing to do.
Yeah.
So that's where that's where the growth really occurs. And one of the things that you really, really said that just speaks to me and how I've operated myself, but it would be my wish for all of humanity to operate this way. And the only way that can happen is if we talk about it, if we focus on it. And I'll give you an example from my world. If someone comes in and we treat them as a patient, I'm looking for everyone to take responsibility in that relationship because it's a dynamic relationship. So what that means and looks like is, as the patient, you want to pay attention to how you feel, have that awareness. As the professional, you want to point out things that for them to be aware of, and then communicate that to each other. And that's how things grow. That's how you problem solve. It's a team effort, 100%. And I find too often doctors blame patients for what they're going through or automatically throw it into a basket of go see a psychiatrist or here's a medication. Patients will not take on responsibility of following the diet they've been instructed to do. And so both us doctors and as patients, when we both take responsibility, it's a beautiful thing. One of my favorite things to hear is some fellow doctors and chiropractors, when they put together a beautiful treatment plan based on what they found, and then they change it based on what they found heading into it. Hmm. So things don't always go 100% according to plan. And when you course correct along the way, based off the information you're now gathering or the feedback from the patient, that's when you start to see changes occur. And then, because what has to happen is people will do business with, people will work with people they know, like, and trust. And that's true for the patient working with the doctor and the doctor working with the patient. If the doctor doesn't trust the patient, it really influences their decision making. And so having that relationship where everyone takes personal responsibility, it just allows growth, and that's when the healing occurs.
I don't remember what book I read it in, but I read a book, oh my goodness, and the story of this woman who had a very treatable issue. It was not a major deal, but because it triggered fears for her, which if you listen often enough, you know that's something I've had to put under my feet, and I think I have. But anyway, she's like, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, and she's flailing. And the nurse is like, this is a standard procedure. It's honestly not to minimize your fear, but this is not a big deal. Well, as she's flailing, the doctor comes in. He's like, what's all the commotion? And she's like, I know I'm going to die. And he put the file thing down. He's like, I'm not operating on you. And he walked out. And he said, your agreement with something that's not true will totally affect your health. And I just feel like we really do have to look at this multifaceted approach. And in John 5, Jesus asked the paralytic, do you want to be well?
Yeah.
And we need to answer that question. Do you want to be well? Because it most likely for most people will not be a quick fix, right? I mean, there are different aspects to our healing that we're going to have to look at, our routines, our bedtime routine. And
yep.
And Mark Batterson always says, work like it all depends on you, pray like it all depends on God. And I just think that has to be the approach for health, because you can't sit and eat your tater tot hot dish morning, noon, and night and go, what's wrong with my cholesterol? I'm just saying.
Yeah, great example.
Yeah. So when we come back, we've got a whole list of questions we didn't get to last time you were on, but the phone lines are open as well if you want to call in, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and we'll be back in a moment. I want two things for my birthday. Remember, it's December 18th, just letting you know. Two things. I want you to engage in the great giveaway, engage in a random act of kindness, and play this Danny Gokey song. Get your loved one and twirl them around and just dance one song. I know many of you listening have never danced in your life. And I just think if you want to make me happy, get up, get your wife, get your husband, twirl them around and dance. It's good for the soul, the same. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Our good buddy, Dr. Troy Spurl, is in studio again. Woohoo! We get him in once a month to answer your questions, your health and healing questions. So as we wait for those calls to come in, I'll pitch the phone number again, 877-933-2484. At our last appointment, you said something really interesting to me. You said your last thoughts of the day and your last words of the day matter incredibly. And this is given, you know, I have a stable, consistent bedtime. I really guard that time. But I'd heard some news of a family who'd suffered a major injustice in Africa, and it went right to my heart. And I didn't know where to put it. And you were saying, even in those situations, there's a way to redeem these thoughts. Explain, first of all, why it matters what your last thoughts and last words are before you go to bed.
Well, as we're drifting off to sleep, there we have a conscious part of the brain and a subconscious part of the brain. And a lot of times, the majority of your brain is actually subconscious. And so the funny thing is you're only aware of the conscious parts, which makes sense. But 80% is really subconscious, and so they're always working. So if you think of a particular person, let's say that person's name is Peter, and your brain, subconscious part of the brain, is going to collect a lot of the data, a lot of the memory about Peter, whether it be about this individual Peter or all the Peters you know, and you're going to get that kind of colored and filtered, and it's going to come to your conscious depending on what other emotions are attached to it, and it will... It'll come out in some way, shape, or form as a positive, negative, neutral thought comment, which then again can induce other emotions. So the challenge is when you're thinking these things before going to bed, especially emotionally charged events before going to bed, your conscious part of the brain starts to go to sleep. But the subconscious is still working. It's keeping your organs alive. It's part of getting into the deep sleep and the resetting of our body. There's even a stage or a point where we actually completely go paralyzed. All of our muscles get shut off. It's like a computer rebooting. And we actually get the healing starts to occur during this stage. Now, some people will have challenges with their airway or sleep apnea or something where they're not getting quite enough oxygen to the brain and they can develop a sleep disorder where it gets pulled out. But the same thing can actually happen if you have a dream that's emotionally charged. And so you can release adrenaline in the middle of the night from a scary dream. We see this with kids, night terrors, even adults, and it can disrupt your sleep. So what you're thinking of as you drift off, it sets in motion the conscious, triggering the subconscious to collect the data and the information.
Interesting. Wow.
Which then think of it as an old movie starts playing in your brain, influencing your dreams when you go to sleep. Not only do our thoughts and what we're thinking about influence it, but many, many people have experienced when they eat certain food before going to bed, it can also trigger negative sleep patterns or negative dreaming even. Things that cause inflammation in the digestive tract that affects the brain chemicals and can actually have us have poor sleeps, especially people who have dairy sensitivities who eat ice cream before bed.
Here's a lethal combination. Yes. Watch a political debate while eating ice cream before bed.
Well, that's crazy talk right there.
You might just go hog wild. And
yes. There was a lot of that this last year.
I'm sure, yeah. Wow. So how do you redeem your thoughts? Because sometimes, you know, information comes by you, like in this case, my heart just was wrapped around the situation. How do you redeem your thoughts before you go to bed?
Well, first of all, I want to fully admit that it's not 100%. So I can basically share what I know about it and what I do, knowing full well that I'm not perfectly sleeping through every night because of that. So I'm imperfectly doing this. I am whenever I catch myself having those thoughts, because I actually, there are certain things that really are buttons for me, and I get worked up, and injustice is one of them, and especially towards kids, and just, you know, life's unfairness sometimes with close friends and family. And I have to go right to surrender. So I have to go to a complete space. For me, I will... I'll bring up a passage that means something. I will have to go into my Bible. Sometimes I just have to shut my brain down and I just focus on my breath. And doing that before going to sleep helps kind of calm things down. But I'm very conscious of my state as I go to sleep and trying my best to get me into that more calm state before I drift off, because it's actually quite surprising how you can be wound up and tired at the same time.
It's so true.
We call it wired and tired. And getting that to actually shut down, there's some physical parts to it. Guys in particular will get up and do push-ups because for men, they oftentimes need physical exercise to process through their emotions.
Really?
We're just very linear that way. Whereas women, if they can speak it, it really makes a difference. And so one of the biggest things you can do, especially if you're married, is to speak your prayers out loud before going to bed, because that's also a physical component. Women tend to do better with this than men, but spouses that pray together. And when you pray, it's not just praying for the family in Africa or not just praying for what you want to have happen for them, but when you actually express it and get it out, and that's a physical way of giving it to God, but you do that together, not only will it be your words, but when your spouse chimes in and starts to pray with you, it can be very, very powerful and completely bring it right back down to a holy smokes, I feel really good right now.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm asleep.
And that's fantastic. And that really goes so biblical that when two or more are gathered, there he is in the midst. And in the prayer of the righteous accomplishes powerful things. And enemy would love for us to worry about something. And God would love us to worship our way through it to see what he can do. And the reason I feel like you're able to discipline yourself enough to go, it matters what I do here before I go to bed, is because you have total buy-in about the value of sleep. But it seems that so few really understand how important that, if there's something to fight for. And again, I had a hysterectomy in my 20s, so I have struggled with sleep my whole adult life. But I am grabbing that thing by the horns, and I'm committed to it because I notice how different I feel when I get sleep. Maybe we've got about a minute and a half before we have to go to a break here. But make the case again, for those who've not heard our past conversations, about how critical, this isn't just, I mean, in this fast age culture, we treat it like it's an extra, but how critical it is that we get a good night's sleep.
Yeah, for me, this is the most underappreciated part of our healthcare is our sleep, because you could eat perfectly, the exact diet you're supposed to eat, and if you do not sleep right, you will get sick. And so sleep is basically when God heals you. Every night when we get into deep sleep, the innate aspects of our body go into action, and the sleep is meant to rejuvenate. It's meant to clean up the garbage from that day, mentally and physically. We activate our immune system and it goes to work. It goes to clean up all the mess in our joints, our muscles. It stimulates hormones to help with the repair process. It starts to clean up the damage from free radical damage, and our antioxidants go in and they actually repair and replace cells.
Amazing.
Our DNA too. And so we need this multiple times a night. It's basically like just... You want to talk complete surrender. Think about what I said before about when we go paralyzed, literally our brain shuts down our body to the point where we can't move. That's surrendering in a completely different way. And God's at work. He's cleaning up your mess from
Amazing.
The day. And so if we guard our thoughts, if we basically step into that in a good place mentally and allow God to work, then we wake up refreshed the next day. We're new the next day. So just taking sleep and then what we know biblically as a Christian, there's so many parallels there, but it does what God intended it to do for
Absolutely
us.
Amazing. One of the great pieces of advice Dr. Troy said is put a journal by your bed and redeem your thoughts that way. If they start to go awry, write them down and write them in a prayer. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com.
In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. In the middle of the war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. When my sails are torn, your love surrounds me. In the eye of the storm.
Love that song, and it's so true. His love surrounds you in the eye of the storm. Really glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Every month we have our good friend Dr. Troy on the show for Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. And as you know, if you listen often enough, our health is a multifaceted thing. You know what I mean? We always want quick fixes, but our choices matter. Our faith matters. How we think about our health and our faith and how we think about God all plays in. We're taking your questions. We'd love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. We've got a whole list of questions, Dr. Troy, that we didn't get to last time. So let's try to get through those first. Paula says, I've been having a low-grade fever of 99 to 100.3 on a daily basis for close to 5 months. I've been in the doctor more than once, tested for everything they can think of. Any advice that you may have would be appreciated.
So without knowing what everything you can think of really means, people who have the low-grade fevers, sometimes it can be as simple as just eating too many carbohydrates. So every time we actually eat, our body temperature goes up a half a degree to a degree. Some people, it goes up even a little bit more. And so that's a natural process from just eating food. So one thought that comes to mind is sometimes, and carbohydrates in particular, can be problematic with that. So for some people, it could be carbohydrates can do that. Food sensitivities can do that. Now, when a traditional allergist, we're not talking about the IgE peanut allergies that causes histamine and the itchy and watery eyes type things. We're talking about a little bit of a bloating problem, something like that. So digestion is one of the main causes of just low-grade fever like that. Dysbiosis or bacterial imbalance can also do it. And there's two in particular that that kind of come to mind. One's a small intestine scenario, and it's called SIBO, S-I-B-O. So small intestinal bowel overgrowth. There's a very specific test for it, and it doesn't get done too often, so it's a rare scenario. But if you can get tested for that, they actually have to test your breath, and if you're blowing off methane and different gases, then they know you've got too much of a certain type of bacteria that's influencing it.
Small intestine bacterial overgrowth, did you mean?
A small, or is it bowel? Yes, bacteria. Okay. Yes, yeah.
No, it's not bowel overgrowth. Gross.
Sorry. Yeah, the other one sounded gross.
Sorry.
Thank you for catching that.
Yeah. But so keep going, because that I bet more people are walking around with SIBO than they realize.
Yes, definitely. We test for it actually quite a bit, and we're shocked how many people have it and don't know it. And then there's other things like a lot of times nasal challenges and dental challenges can cause the exact same thing. So a low-grade infection in the teeth and gum area, or a fungal or a low-grade strep infection in the nasal passages. And there's one in particular you can test for. It's called Marcons, M-A-R-C-O-N-S. And so those are rare ones that are actually very common, so rarely tested, but are common, and they do elevate the body temperature. And then the last thing that can do that is hormones. The area of the brain that regulates our thermal body is very much influenced by hormones. So anything that affects the liver, excess caffeine, hormones, and intestinal inflammation from food allergies and bacterial buildup can elevate those the body temperature like that.
So SIBO, what are the causes? Would that be overuse of antibiotics?
That's one.
Too much sugar, possibly.
That's another
too many
one.
Carbs, as you were saying.
Yep.
And
Dr. Larson.
Come on. I just was living for that one comment where he would call me Dr. Larson. No, I'm kidding. But would you advise somebody if they're not sure? I mean, best to get it checked out. But that SIBO diet is interesting because things that are healthy, like avocados, apples, different things, actually are something contraindicated for the person dealing with
that. Yeah, temporarily
right?
They are, correct. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, sometimes this health thing is just so crazy because you think you're doing everything right. And then you get this diagnosis of SIBO and you're like, really, I'm supposed to avoid these healthy, good for me foods. And the answer is yes. And really all food is good until we're told otherwise by someone in the know or your own body. So pay attention. Even though an avocado may be good for you, it may not be good for you right now.
Wow. And if someone doesn't take care of SIBO and it stays hidden, but they have all this bacterial overgrowth, what would other symptoms be? And then what would other health issues spring out of that?
Well, it can actually change into many different things. But what I'm going to say is the most common ones I see are more in the fatigue arena and migraines. So the headaches and the fatigue are the two most common where you kind of treat for those two scenarios and they'll improve, and then all of a sudden they
come
back.
Just don't get better.
So if you change your diet and things improve, or if you've done stuff for headaches, migraines, and they improve and go away, but then it comes back, that's one of the signs that you might be dealing with one of these hidden infections like SIBO mm-hmm. or Marcon's.
Mm, interesting. This, let's see here. This anonymous, I got to scroll back up my little screen here. Anonymous friend called in. And by the way, feel free to call anonymously. And if you're too nervous about getting on the air, do what these anonymous friends have done and talk to Aaron and he'll put the question up on the board for me. This dear listener writes in, granddaughter has not grown for 5 years, doesn't sleep well, but eats well and is normal in a lot of ways. What can be done?
Well, the first thing is they should go into their medical doctor and get tested to make sure they've got growth hormone. Mm-hmm. And so if there's not a lot of growth, we've got to check the hormones first. So mm-hmm. if the hormones have not been checked, first stop is right there. And your doctor will send you to an endocrinologist and they will start working on getting you the hormone you need and trying to identify why you may not be producing that hormone.
Okay.
Other than that, especially if you know diet's good, nutrition's been good, we have to look at genetic factors, like if that is common in that family. If it's uncommon, then just more of a need to go in and make sure the hormones are good.
I was going to say, it looks like there was a typo. It's 1 year. So that's less concerning than 5 years. Is that?
Oh, so the baby's yeah. 1 year old?
No, they haven't grown in a year compared to 5 years.
Less concerning. But it's something to observe. Try not to worry about it. And 1 year is, you know, we see that. We do mm-hmm. see that. There was, personally, I don't know if I want to admit this on the air, but I actually did not hit 5 feet tall until the 10th grade.
Hmm.
And so I was very, very short, and they weren't sure if I was going to grow. And then in the 10th grade, I grew 6 inches in 2 months.
Something?
And then another 3 inches after that. And mm-hmm. I'd like to say kept going, but no.
Okie dokie. You wouldn't even have had to admit that. No one would ever know.
No.
He's 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. This caller says, I have diabetes, had a detached retina, and now I'm wrestling with watery eyes. Any thoughts?
If it's type 2 diabetes, it's very important to keep the blood sugar regulated. And sometimes if you're insulin dependent or you're taking insulin for it, we can get caught in this trap of, well, I'm just going to eat sugar and balance it with my insulin. And when you get the highs and lows, that can be very hard on our body. So it's very, very important to keep your blood sugar as balanced without getting the spikes, number one. Then that teaches your body to use that with oxygen properly, and you get more of a balanced metabolism.
Hmm.
Exercise is very important, but with a detached retina, they will tell you just don't exercise while it's detached. It's something you just can't get too excited, and you have to be very, very careful. Whenever we see that scenario in the functional medicine world, we have concerns too about what's happening with the head itself and the cranial work or blood flow to the head. So we'd want to make sure cholesterol and circulation is good going to the head, neck, jaw, and brain, and in particular the eyes. And there is a very important part of the brain called the cerebellum that regulates eye motion, blood flow to the brain stem, and is dependent on three things being balanced: your blood sugar, your insulin, and your cortisol. So if you have stress on top of being a diabetic, that can alter the blood flow to key areas of the brain stem and in particular the head. And so that's why we want to keep that as managed as possible. And of course, you have to stay very, very hydrated, and not only in the body but in the head, to make sure that you're getting the oxygen and the blood flow to the eyes. And the eyes require, there's small, small blood vessels there to support them. They require specific antioxidants, and in particular, the fat-soluble antioxidants. And so the diet, again, and the liver and gallbladder play a huge role with this. So vitamin A, D, E, and K are crucial for that blood flow. And vitamin A is very important for eyes and lungs. So if there's some asthma or other issues like that, then we might be looking at some deficiencies there, because the diabetes makes it a little bit harder to absorb the fat-soluble vitamins. And those are, again, vitamin A, D, E, and K.
Excellent. Okay, let's see here. Anonymous caller, what can be done about restless leg syndrome?
Well, quite a bit, but there are a few different causes of restless leg. So Again, this falls into an actual potential sleep disorder, but if it's happening while you're awake, the most simplest form or common deficiency we see is iron deficiency can help set that up.
Oh, wow.
So make sure you're not anemic or have iron deficiency. After that, again, we're looking at lymphatic congestion from a chemistry point of view, as far as the lymph system being just overloaded, and that can come from excessive sugar. It can come from hidden infection, not drinking enough water, not exercising enough. From a neurologic perspective, there is anything from pelvic floor instability. So depending on the age of the person asking, if they just had a baby within the last year or two, then that can play into it. If it's a man, that's not the case. It'll be more like a low back scenario where if they have a little bit of a belly on them and that bottom bone in the back slides forward, it's called spondylolisthesis. That can actually weaken the legs and they become jumpy. And funny enough, caffeine all by itself can eventually cause restless leg syndrome in certain individuals.
Wow.
And omega-3 deficiency. So as you can see, there's a lot of different variables and probabilities. It's important to find for you what might be a fit, but things that congest the lymph system, vitamin D deficiency, omega-3 deficiency, food allergies, environmental allergies, cat or dog allergies, if you're an animal lover but know you react to them, there's some lymph consequences there. Working on that, getting moving can help quite a bit with the restless leg, and addressing any type of sleep disturbance other than the restless leg itself can also be very, very helpful.
Someday we're going to devote a whole show to sleep. But
yeah,
coming back, we're going to talk about a worldwide issue. Can you guess what it is? You were right. It's belching. Just kidding. But we are going to talk about it because Dr. Troy says it's a bigger problem than you realize, and it actually traces back to issues going on in your body. So we'll talk about that. Rachel emailed in with a question. We'll tackle your question as well, Rachel. Call me if you've got a question, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, Merry Christmas. It could be oh so cold, 2 feet of snow, streets all covered with white. Baby, you and me, Rockefeller tree, magic in the air tonight. It's a wintry sea, lights sparkling, snow is falling down.
Sorry, I forgot I was on live radio. Isn't that a fun song?
Yes.
That's from Danny Gokey's Christmas album. We had him on last year to talk about his songs, and oh, it was such a delightful conversation. That is an amazing album. Put you right in the Christmas mood. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Honored to have our good friend Dr. Troy in studio as Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We're taking your questions, your calls. We've got a whole list of them left over from last time as well. 877-933-2484. Okay, so I promised this question about belching, and I made a little bit of a joke about it, but it's no joke, as you say, Dr. Troy, because it's actually an issue. I do have a question from a woman regarding that, and but I want you to talk about it on a bigger scale, but maybe you want to first answer her question, but then talk to us about this epidemic.
Yes.
All right, so she's anonymous, and she said, I'm 85 pounds overweight. I struggled with esophageal spasms for 4 years now. Excuse me, it was treated 2 years ago as acid reflux. Then I was 110 pounds overweight. Since then, I've decreased my weight, caffeine consumption, and now I'm on the THM diet. Still, sometimes I find myself with uncontrollable burping and pains in my chest. I'm becoming frustrated, and that is frustrating, and I want you to know I'm not making light of that situation at all. That stuff is stressful. So maybe address her question, then the bigger issue that we were talking about here.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, really, because whenever we have belching, generally speaking, we know there's a problem in the upper GI part of our digestive system. So that includes the stomach, the pancreas, and the liver gallbladder. So the stomach's job is to release acid that breaks protein down. And then the pancreas's job is to release enzymes that break down the carbohydrates, if you will. And the liver's job with the gallbladder is to make the bile, store the bile, and then put the bile out there, and that emulsifies the fats. And so together, though, they meet at a certain part of our intestinal tract, and they make a particular juice that breaks everything down. And there's a bit of a process through here. So obviously the stomach gets first shot at, and then the other two. And so when things aren't functioning quite well with those three organs, something's up with them, there can be dysfunction. So if you consume too much sugar, all of a sudden the pancreas can start to act up and not release the enzymes. If the pH is off, meaning you're too acidic or not acidic enough based on the food that you eat, then it can affect the stomach and can also affect the ability to digest the food. Now, many things actually influence our liver and bile production. If we have a lot of, if we eat a lot of fatty food, it can actually affect the liver gallbladder system. If we have estrogen or hormone imbalances, specifically too much estrogen that has to be broken down, metabolized in the liver system, it could actually affect our digestive system. Mm. There's also a structural component to this. A lot of times stomach will actually get caught up on the diaphragm. Now, one of the physical consequences of that is the throat tightening and acid reflux. So a functional doctor will pull down that stomach off that diaphragm. It's a functional hiatal hernia, not a surgical medical hiatal hernia, but a functional one. So sometimes you can have shortness of breath or you feel the tightening in the airway. And it's very, very important to actually bring that stomach down, and you can actually start to digest the food. You can breathe better too. And that's a big part of it, because if your stomach goes off, it will throw off the timing mechanism for everything else. And the stomach will release acid. We've got these beautiful cells. They're called parietal cells that when they get stretched or they have pressure put against them, when the food kind of rolls up against them, it releases acid. Well, if your stomach is caught up on the diaphragm and you take a deep breath or you're breathing in and out, it's doing the same thing from the outside of the stomach. Hmm. So you release acid at the wrong time. So it kind of throws off the whole mechanism, and we can get acid reflux, we can get ulcers, we can get all kinds of different things, including now we've started to set up a scenario where bad bacteria can grow and we get infections like H. pylori or gastritis, inflammation of the lining of the stomach. So the important thing is to check and make sure that the stomach's not caught up in the diaphragm or have a doctor check that. Or if you just get short of breath from eating a little bit of food, you can almost know that's the case. Or just feel underneath your rib cage all the way up the right side and across down through the left. And if there's a lot of pressure, tension, or pain, then you know there's some level of dysfunction going on there. Now, the foods that will really irritate this area are, she's exactly right, caffeine, sugar, tomato sauce is the one that kind of sneaks in that a lot of people don't know about, spicy foods, alcohol, and anything like high fried fat. Yeah, that was hard to say.
Yeah, that would be hard.
Yeah, high fried fat. So those are generally the things that irritate, coffee being another one. So because coffee is very acidic, but it's also broken down. The caffeine especially is broken down in the liver system. What actually happens is when we drink the coffee, it can cause the adrenal glands to release adrenaline. But coffee actually caffeine will inhibit that breakdown of adrenaline, so it circulates longer. So and when we get adrenaline circulating in our body, it triggers the parts of our nervous system that activate our arms and our legs, our fight or flight. It does not trigger the area of the brain that helps with healing digestive system or going to sleep. So that's why you don't drink coffee before going to bed.
Hmm.
Because the part of the brain, you're awake, adrenaline will get everything moving. And if you don't move those arms and legs, it's setting up a scenario that is causing challenges with your lymph system in your arms and legs. And the digestive system does not get supported.
So even for the person who says, coffee doesn't affect me at night, I can sleep through the night, it's doing something physiologically to them?
Yeah,
but
it
must
is,
be,
and that's not a good sign, because that happens.
Okay, I got to tell you, we might have time for this one. We got about 3.5 minutes or so to the top of the hour. But that's Rachel's question was along the lines of coffee. Could Dr. Troy talk about some of the pros, antioxidants, and cons, caffeine, of coffee? I love coffee, but because of some of the things he's mentioned on past shows, I have a little anxiety over my beloved beverage now. I'm curious what he has to say on the subject. Love that question, Rachel. What say you?
I'm sorry, Rachel,
because
there are good benefits to coffee as well. In fact, for myself personally, I actually did not start drinking coffee until I was 43 years old. I had my first cup of coffee, and then I understood why people were so excited about it, because all of a sudden,
Canadians.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
It doesn't take much, but it actually is a good stimulant for the brain. And there's actual research that shows that coffee can help in prevention of Parkinson's. It can actually help the brain. So we need a little bit of caffeine to stimulate the adrenaline. It's a good thing. You don't and can't be relaxed completely all the time. And so caffeine is really good. The challenge is if you have any anxiety already or you have a high-paced life, it may not be the best choice for you. And when you combine it with other things, it may not be the best choice. So if you're really clean with your diet and you have occasional cup of coffee, it's actually a really good, healthy thing.
Rachel, see, there you go. And this is bringing me back to my fitness days. So if I'm saying this wrong, correct me on live radio. But isn't it like a vasodilator or something like that? It dilates the vessel.
And it's a diuretic. So it'll also cause you to dump some excess water here. But you can get dehydrated because of that. So you do have to watch that.
And I'll tell you one of the things that I've switched over as I'm dealing with some of the adrenal fatigue thing, Rachel, is this Organo. Am I saying that right?
Yep,
you sell
Organo.
This at your clinic, and it's an organic coffee. I love it so much more. I sip normal coffee now, and I don't even like the taste of it because this is so smooth. But there are coffees like this that actually do the opposite of what coffees actually do.
It's got gonadoderm in it, and so it actually helps with the balancing of the pH. It actually ultimately has an alkalizing effect versus a acidifying effect, and it's got much, much, much reduced caffeine. So you've got the flavor and the taste with a little bit of some of the energy you get from it comes from natural antioxidant properties versus the full effect from the caffeine.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Telling you. So I'm not sure, but I think is there an equivalent to maybe half a cup of coffee or even less?
I would say, I don't know that answer. Mm-hmm. It's probably as far as caffeine, you mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, even less.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even less.
I love it. So, Rachel, I'll send you a note with a link in case you're interested. But if you're loving your coffee and eating healthy, it's not the crime of the century, right?
That's right.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about managing stress. Our producer, Matt, noted that life expectancy has recently gone down after 40 years of it going up in the U.S., and you have a comment as to why that is and even how it affects our children. Let's see, we've got 2.5 minutes since we're not doing the prayer at the first hour. Matt's looking at me like, keep talking. Okay, so we've got time for this question. Chris says, suffering from Raynaud's disease, I can't get my hands and toes to be warm. I think we have time for that one. What do you say?
So the circulation scenario that comes with Raynaud's, you have to treat it like an autoimmune disorder, and there's a lot of things that affect that. And so number one, I want to tell you right out of the gates, it's a very challenging thing to treat time-wise. But I have many people with Raynaud's that become quite, quite severe that within 2 to 5 years, it's almost non-existent or gone.
And for those who don't know, can you say real quick?
Well, it's almost like your fingers turn different colors, and they can go to even white, and you feel like their fingertips are on fire, but it's from cold. Like cold basically induces it, and the blood vessels will start to contract, and so it's a lack of oxygen to your fingertips. It can be quite painful for a lot of people, and so the cold can help trigger it. And people, if you treat it like autoimmune, meaning there are 8 factors to manage it. So the cold is the ultimate trigger, but looking at what is influencing it, stress, hormone imbalance, food reactions, estrogen toxicities, vitamin D deficiencies, all play a role with that. And the people who are in fight or flight continuously, like we've talked about, when you're in fight or flight, your brain sends signals to your arms and legs, your hands and feet, so you can fight or flee. And if you're not using them by fighting or fleeing, then you can start to develop these circulation problems because your brain is sending signals for more blood flow there, but then you don't use the muscles. And so it can be very, very problematic, and it's very confusing to the brain when you're supposed to be fighting or fleeing and you're not moving. So stress, long-term stress and fight or flight plays into it quite a bit. And then chemical toxicities can also trigger immune responses with it. Generally speaking, the people that we help clean up their diet, reduce their stress, get them sleeping deeply, check and see if they're vitamin D deficient or estrogen dominant and work on that, then we start to make some progress. The only challenge is you got to wait till next winter to see if it worked.
Wow. Interesting. Wow. Thanks for that question. This anonymous friend says, I eat healthy. I clean and take extra flaxseed. However, I don't have... Okay, we'll get to that one after. Sorry, we're running out of time. Coming up next, hour two. Keep the questions coming in, 877-933-2484. I wasn't ready for it, okay? We'll get back to it.